This will be interesting to go through John. We're gonna take a while, I imagine, going through John, because John's the book that you give to everybody. We used to give to everybody, and it's still not a bad book at all. It's about Jesus. I mean, there he tells us about himself, and there's lots of details in there. We just cannot forget the mindset that he's not talking to us, he's talking to the Jews. We can learn from what he says. And some of these verses we've all just said, and I'm not gonna deny that they can't be said still, but I think that we'll understand the depth behind the verses more than we had before, if you know what I mean. John 3:16. There's going to be more to that verse than we've ever considered. Things like that. So, and that's what I would call the way of God more perfectly. What's the other one? Way of God more perfectly. What's that? More excellent way. There's going to be more depth as we go through the book of John that we'll see. So let's start with chapter 2. And we'll probably just go chapter at a time, maybe. I have no idea. In John chapter 2, we've got his miracle and some comments in here that I hope will still be something for us to apply to us today, which is still what this is all about, still. Chapter 2, verse 1. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. So there's a marriage ceremony going on, at least a marriage going on here. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, they have no wine. Now, watch closely here. We know this is not alcoholic beverage, booze, hooch, all that kind of stuff. We know that. We have to know that. I mean, come on. And she says, they have no wine. And he says, Jesus says unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. And then look at what his mother says. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. Now, is that disregarding your son? I mean, he said, this isn't my time. And she says, okay, you guys, listen to him as he tells you what to do. Now, that's mom telling him, make the wine, son. Do you see that there? Now, and don't get excited about the word woman. He's called his mother a woman. You kids, don't be calling your mom woman or man, kind of a thing. But that's interesting that he would call her woman, you know. But it makes me think that sometimes, that made me think that, does she not understand it? Because what he can't be talking about, this is not the time to make his first miracle, because all of a sudden he makes his first miracle. He goes ahead and he does it. And it isn't that mom told him what to do, because if this is the case, then the Catholics would be right that Jesus couldn't do anything without mom's approval or mom's assistance or mom telling him how to be the Holy One and so that everybody worships Mary. It cannot be that way at all. So it has to be what he's talking about, because when he talks about his hour, that has to be his crucifixion. And for that answer, I don't quite understand that aspect. What do I have to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. So, we see here, look at Luke chapter 2 just for a second here. Luke chapter 2. Remember when, he was found in the temple, they lost him for a little bit there, Mary and Joseph. And then they find us, Luke chapter 2, verse 40. As a child grew, let's see here, Luke chapter 2, verse 40, let's go down, gotta keep going here though, that's the whole story. Let's go down to verse 46, 45, and they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. I always wonder how you get so far, not know your kid's missing, but, oh well, you know. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said unto him, son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. It's not, what are you doing, God of us? Look what have you done to us, kind of a thing. And he said unto them, how is it that ye sought me? Wish ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understand not the saying which he spake unto them. And I find that very interesting, because look at Luke chapter 2, verse 15. And it came to pass, as angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass. And it goes down, and look at verse 19. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. So she knew something was up. And what these shepherds had to tell her was quite astounding. Really. So it seems to me in some ways she should have known. You know? And look at Matthew chapter 1. And it goes back with Mary where the angel talked to her as well. So she knows there's an interesting thing going on here. Matthew chapter 1. What about Joseph? And then it starts at verse 18, and he hears the whole story. Down to verse 21, they shall call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins. By the way, his people from their sins. And that goes on. You read the whole story down to verse 25, that these two should have known who he was and what was coming forth here. So, but they didn't always do that. And it says that Mary had to ponder the things that she heard. She had to think about this stuff. So, when you go back to John chapter 2, you can see why she might not quite understand what's going on here yet. But she knew that he could make wine. What do you think about that for your kids? We often think too highly of our kids, don't want to hear things that are negative. Do you think your kids can go home and make wine out of the bathtub water? I mean, this is what they knew. She knew Jesus could do this. But again, it couldn't have been alcoholic wine. So, if we keep going, verse 6, this is how he does it. And there were set there six water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing two or three firkins. A firkin is about 10 gallons, from what I've learned, anyway. So he made a lot. Jesus saith unto them, Fill the water pots with water, and they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, Draw out now, and bear it to the governor of the feast. And they bear it. And when the fruit of the feast had tasted the water, it was made wine. So, verse 11, this was the beginning of miracles. So we know that this is one of the things that takes place. This is the first time. And we're certainly not going to take the time this morning to talk about whether alcoholic wine is good. More and more Christians are getting into the alcoholic wine thing everywhere. They've been told that it's healthier. They've been told that it'll help you live longer, age easier, and the whole thing. We live in wine country, so what are we going to do? That can't be possible. Alcoholic stuff is like Jesus preached to that thing. The Bible's full of 75 verses I got one time on against drinking, that kind of a deal. So that can't be what, but we won't get into that and the grape and everything. But I do have a quote I want to read to you about how to deal with this wine thing or whatever else that we do today that Christians seem to think is okay. I'm just going to read you this little paragraph. The problem here is a cultural, not a historic problem. Today we have a difficult time visualizing adults drinking grape juice at a wedding rather than alcoholic wine. Even we Christians have bought into the adult beverage propaganda. Think of whatever else we call adult. We have adult TV, we have adult movies, we have an adult place to go. We're going to go to this dance, but that's for adults only, that kind of a thing. The world has been very sly in presenting sin as just adult. I think about the rating system years ago when they came out with a rating system, and people said way back then that this isn't going to work. And you know, today a G rated movie is as dangerous for your children as an R. In fact, more so. Because an R, or whatever letter you want to go by, it's obvious. But a G is full of subtle stuff that I don't understand it, but why we ought to know by now that a G has got some stuff in there you don't want your kids to see. You're not going to know they're seeing it. You're not going to know they're learning it. But you know by now that they're learning something you don't want them to learn. And I don't care if that video is from a Christian organization. The Christian organizations are, if you show your kids a video from a Christian perspective, you know that that's a Great Commission perspective. You know that. And we should not be showing our children any of these modern Christian lovey smovey pioneer, we've done this. There's Great Commission in there, and we are subtly teaching our children something they're going to have to unlearn someday. You know that. But it's something that we enjoy, and I can understand why we enjoy it, because there's a lot of goodness in there. But we're filling our kids with Great Commission mentality, and we know that that's not a sign to say, well, then I can't show them anything. Fine. Live a life with your children. Get to know your children. One of the things I remember about homeschool is when you mentioned that I get to know my son better. I get to know him better because you know their problems. You know what they're hurting with, and you know this and that. You know him better. Spend all this time with him. popping, I'm telling you, been there, done this, okay, so I'm crabbing to myself as well. Popping your kids in front of a video is just wrong. It's dangerous, and it's a lazy parent that does that. How can I say that? Because I was a lazy parent when I did that. So don't get mad. That's being a very lazy parent when you flop your kids in front of a video. Here, watch this, and you go away. That's from me to you and to me. I'm not picking on anybody. I did it too. And I shouldn't have. What'd you guys do without videos and all that stuff? What'd you do as a kid? Time to pull something back? An hour and a half. That's about the length of a video.
We didn't entertain ourselves pretty much. What they like to do is take a stick with a thing and around
and... Man, you back to that? You back to that era? Whew. Did they have teenagers back in those days? Teenagers? Did they just put them to work?
Yeah, they had teenagers, but sometimes they didn't
act like it. Oh. Anyway. I'm sorry, run out of time here. I just put that out there. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I see it. Whatever. Well, then if you did it, why can't we? Don't be so dumb. You know? Anyway, this mindset has been implemented, implanted in our heads through decades of television, been there, and through our degenerated cultural morals. This causes us to superimpose the social standards of the 20th century over top of this scene from the first century. We say to ourselves, in America, everybody drinks booze at a wedding, therefore they must have been drinking booze at a wedding mentioned in John chapter 2. So if we do it, they must have done it. That's how we turn this thing around. In spite of our natural bent toward viewing everything this way, we must pay attention to the fact that there have been many changes in social norms over the centuries. Today we say, he cusses like a sailor. Yet the Continental Army that defeated the British in the American Revolution did not curse. Years later, while President George Washington wrote a letter to the military leaders urging them not to allow the practice of cursing to take hold in our military as it was in the armies of the world. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the Marines not swearing and cussing and doing and drinking all the stuff that they, you know? But that's how it's happened. Can you imagine an adult sitting around at a wedding drinking grape juice? No, but they both have happened. In other words, wine in the Bible doesn't have to mean fermented just because we do it today. And that's a good point that he makes. Quite often we are having to unlearn something that we've just always done. I mean, you know, it's not only our kids, but young adults, middle-aged kind of people, have never heard the concept of one Bible. They've never had that. So when we talk to people about one Bible, what do you mean one Bible? They've had all these different Bibles. They've never even heard that there's one Bible. All that kind of a thing. Look what the kids are growing up with today. And they think, and you go that even to our generation. So just because it's done, and just because there's grace, doesn't make it right. And I know the video thing is quite hard, because there's good things to show kids on the video. They just hope it's a good thing that you show. And remember this, that a video is a bunch of pictures. And the more videos they see, the less they're going to enjoy reading. The less that they enjoy reading, the less they're going to enjoy this. And I've come to realize as pastor here that some of the difficulty we have here, and don't take this as a slam or anything, some of the difficulty we're having here as a church is because some of us are not very good readers. And I'm not criticizing, I'm not knocking that thing, it's a fact. That I've heard us read, and in some cases, some folks are doing good to get the verse out without having to study it and put this stuff together. So I'm thinking one of these days I'm going to do a little chit-chat up here about how to study, how to learn. My observations are young people today are not learning how to learn. We're throwing them facts and the correct answers, but they're not learning how to learn. I've seen some of you in here lean over and tell your kid the answer when I ask a question. What good did that do? Nobody's going to mock your kids because they have the wrong answer. But you're preventing them from learning how to learn. And I'm scared for kids. Anyway, so we're in a messed up culture. America doesn't do it right. It's frustrating, isn't it, to hear the Islamic people say what they say about America? Because quite often they're right. Our morals and our poor and all this kind of stuff. They go, you America, you're wicked. Well, we are. We are. We've come that way. So anyway, all in the name of liberty. See, it's just like the liberty as a Christian. We have liberty to do anything, but it's not all expedient to do. So anyway. So there's an awful lot in that story there about the wine, but that is his first miracle there. And, you know, there you go. Verse 11. Chapter 2, verse 11. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and here's why he did miracles. Manifested forth his glories. And then we see there his disciples believed on him. Why did the disciples believe on him? Because of what they saw. So here we are today trying to follow a gospel or teachings that's all geared for people to see. They still have to believe, but they have to see it to believe it. And so why would they not pull this out today in Christianity today? Because what do people have to do today to believe something? They have to see it. And this visual thing, Christianity today is so visual. That's why I'm scared of the video thing. It's visual. It's not words. So, and we see this all through and through here, that they have to believe because of what they see. So he's going to show them what they need to see. And that he's going to manifest his glory. Okay, verse 13. Then we get into something else I can whine about here. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting, and when he made a scourge of small cords. So we know that story. Look at verse 16. And he said unto them that sold doves. Well, what do we have today for the kind of like the general symbol for Christianity? There's two of them. One is a cross, and one is a dove. Oh well. And the other day, I did mention this article the other day. Now I've got the notes for it here. The Southern Baptist Magazine that is entitled, Where Are the Men? And it says, here's some quotes. The faith begun by a carpenter and 12 male disciples has lost its appeal to the men of our generation. What does it have to do with this? It's the fact that Christianity and within the churches, it's a money-making deal. And it seems to me that nobody has any stuffings to do anything about these things anymore. I know I never have, and I'm not sure I still do. I still worry about stuff in here, but listen to what they say about this. This is modern Christianity. Where are the men? The faith begun by a carpenter, the man, and 12 male disciples has lost its appeal to the men of our generation. Here's a poll that they took for what it's worth. For every 10 men in the average church, 9 will have kids who leave the church when they get old enough. 5 have a major problem with pornography. 4 will divorce, affecting 1 million kids a year. Only 1 will have a biblical worldview, and you know what they mean by that. So we'll add one more to that thing. We'll probably about a fifth of that one man understand Paul. So this is what's going on. And then here's some more quotes. Choruses are choruses laced with lyrics akin to love songs. Christ has put down a sword and picked up a daisy. He is no longer a warrior, he is a lover. Think of the mental gymnastics that must take place inside a man's subconscious as he sings today's feel-good lyrics. He is made to express his love to Jesus using words no man would dare say to another man. So the move is to bring the church back to men, or men back into the church. Now, I used to look at those late-night TV Pentecostal guys and those, forgot the names of those things. And there used to be a lot of women. Now they're full of men. And it's changed. The man is changing. The man has changed. And here's kind of my summary of this whole thing. We know through the scriptures, through the King James Bible, that the strong man had to be taken down. The strong man has been taken down. He's been taken out of the home, and he's been taken out of the church. If they come, they're not interested. If they're in the home, they're not interested. So the devil did a very good job of destroying the foundations. What's the foundation? The teachings of the risen Christ. Out of a King James Bible, rightly divided beyond Paul. So what have they done? What has the devil done? He's taken the man out of the church, changed the church, the teachings, putting the man back in. And he's a metro man. He's a modern man. He's a flower-loving man. He's not what men used to be. So in order to do that, he brings the men back into the church. Then they come up with these kind of teachings. Say they're gonna stump the men back into the church, get the men going again, and they're gonna be doing everything that the women have changed and designed. And then when the Antichrist shows up, the men are gonna be as thrilled as the women. You've lived through this whole process. And then if you can see that, that's an amazing thing that you've been through to see that thing taking place. Now, Daniel chapter 11, I'll take you there again, Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11 did not need to take place if the men would have stayed men. Daniel chapter 11, verse 37. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, that's the Antichrist, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself. And that's what's taking place. Why do I get so uptight about the things that are changing for the women and for the men? Why do I get so uptight about your girls? I want them to be girls. It's not because I'm some pervert. Get that out of your mind. I want your girls to grow up to be girls. I want the boys in here to grow up to be boys and men. Why is that? Because Daniel chapter 11 tells me that that is the plan of the Antichrist, is to make your girls act and tough like men, and the boys to act and be like girls. That's his job. That's what he's doing. I want to color that thing, as well as for your kids. That's a big deal. Here's a quote. I quoted this to you a couple of weeks ago, and it fits even better here. All men make mistakes, but a good man yields when he knows his course is wrong, corrects his course, repairs the evil. Only sin is pride. I know there's only sin is not pride, what we made in this quote, but that's what this sin is, it's pride. A real man, a good man, yields when he knows his course is wrong. And he corrects his course. What kind of captain do you want in your ship? If he finds out from his navigator that they're on the wrong course, he says, well, too late. Well, I'm enjoying this one. You want a guy that will change the course. What if we'd have stayed with, I'm not meaning anything by this other than an example, what if we'd have stayed with where we were 8 years ago? You wouldn't have the courage, you wouldn't have the knowledge, you wouldn't have the understanding that you've gotten with your Bible. We might have been happier. Some of you folks might not be as mad at me now as you were, as mad at me then as you are now. But you understand your Bible. You got rightly dividing better. You know about Paul. You've made more enemies than you've ever had before in your life. You lost family members. Would you rather go back and have this happy church? I remember when I first got here, I bought a ping pong table, we bought the volleyball nesting, we put the volleyball out back, we strung it from the house to remember all those years. You know why we did that? So the middle-aged kids would enjoy coming here with a fresh out of high school kids. That was a great commission. I didn't know that. I didn't think about it at the time. Did it work? No. Well, maybe if we bring up a pool table, we get an air hockey game in here, maybe that'll work. It won't work. We'd blow a lot of money. So we want to go back to that? We don't want to go back to that. We changed our course here. Or God changed the course here. Go back to before Ken and before Dave. We go back into those days. This course has been changed all over the place in this church. But that's what you do when you dig into the Bible. What happens in a riot of divine? You understand? What happens if you follow profane and vain babblings? Born godliness. So that's what Paul is all about. A man finding out he's on the wrong course and changing. But now the captain goes down and tells the people to be quiet. We're going this way. Don't worry about it. It's okay. Trust me. Right. There's some verses in here for that little group, but we'll get past that. Let's go to verse 17. I've come to learn that if I can't talk to the man to get the man to see some of these things, then there sure is no point in going anywhere else. And yet there are people out there where the men have caught on. We're just slower than molasses, as you would say, right? So we're just slow. And we don't want to get it, because if you get it, we don't want to get it now. Ladies, if you get it and you try to tell us, we just don't want to get it now. I want to get that on my own. And I'm that way. I'm that way. We've talked about stuff like this before, and it was known in my family years and years and years ago. And I just, whatever. I'm getting it. And now it's kind of like, watch out. I'm not sure you know how to do this quite right. Well, let's just do it. Let's make this course change and see what's going on here. It's a rough course to change, though. I suppose if you studied boating, I guess you got to change your boat course. You got to get out of the wake and you got to go against the wake. I suppose there's some kind of sermon in there. You want to do that sometime, Scott? I mean, go right ahead. Then you kind of get back into the groove again, and then it just moves right down the river. But in the process, storms come up, fish come up, bite a chunk out of the boat, motor runs out of gas, and the blade falls off, and all this kind of stuff. It just happens, you know. That's okay. We're getting back on the right course. Whip out the oars. Oars? Only got one oar. Then you're going to sit there and go in circles if you don't open up your eyes a little bit, you know. Daddy, we're not getting anywhere. Yeah, but we're changing our course. Anyway, verse 17. Right after the merchandising thing, they're selling doves and all that stuff. What a mess modern Christianity's become. And his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house has eaten me up. Who knows where that's at? might be noted in your Bible, Psalm 69 says this, verse 9, "For the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up." Well, who's this? Who's talking here? This is a Jewish quote, Jewish conversation, the whole thing. Now, what about zeal? Oh, we could have a good time with zeal. Look at Romans chapter 10. Here we go. We've got a couple of minutes. I know that this change in the course thing and doing the things that we've done and some of the massive course changes that have taken place within your family or the course changes that should take place in your family, course change to what? To Paul's manner of life. Not the do list of Paul, but Paul's manner of life within that home. That's a tough change to make sometime, and we need some zeal. You run out of zeal after a while. You just get tired. You get worn down. You get battle weary. And if you're not careful, if you're not careful of what you think, you might think that this whole mess is your fault. It's your fault for going King James only, talking to your friends. I lost my friend. I'm King James only. It's your fault for going to Paul. It's your fault for letting God tell you in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 that if you have to, get away. And after a while, you're going to start thinking it's your fault. Because you've lost your zeal. You've lost your zeal. What does Paul say to us about zeal? Romans chapter 10, verse 2. "I bear them record that they have a zeal of God." This is the Jews he's talking about. But it's still applicable, isn't it? We lose our zeal. Or there are people out there that have a zeal of God. They're Christians. They say they're Christians. They're modern Christians. They go to church all the time. They try to follow the Ten Commandments. They try to dress so-so halfway right. They try to do their kids, or if not, they keep an eye on their kids in the school. I mean, they really have a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. Now, we can pin this knowledge down a little tighter. Look at Ephesians chapter 3. What knowledge? Knowledge of the Bible? Well, sure, of course. Genesis through Revelation. But there's a lot of people out there that know their Bibles very well. You know that. They've never heard of rightly dividing. In fact, I think that the white cotton's here, but I don't see Tim Buffin up here, but Tim has been to Bible college. And he came, but what did he come out of Bible college with? A bunch of questions. Isn't that exciting? Like, how can this be? How can this be? How can this be? And when he heard about the Paul thing, the first time he was here, he sat back there and he said, "This makes sense." His questions are being answered just da-da-da-da. There they are. Now, what does it say? Ephesians chapter 3, verse 4. "Whereby when ye read, you may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ." So the knowledge that we need to have with zeal is Paul's knowledge. What it is that Paul was taught, that Paul learned, we need to have a zeal to learn that too. He says in Corinthians, "Even so ye, for as much as ye are zealous of spiritual gifts, seek that ye may excel to the edifying of the church." I know you think that I'm a whacker and I'm a criticizer and I'm a judgmental person and I can be critical of stuff. But listen, this is supposed to edify our church. This is our family. We're supposed to be edified. And sometimes you can sit down to their doctor and he tells you that you're sick. That's not being edified. Yes, it is. It's being told that you're sick. That's okay. And the Corinthians church was into the spiritual gift thing. They wanted the speaking in tongues thing going on. This, by the way, Corinthians is why you have to go beyond Paul, because if you stick with Corinthians and do what they're doing, you can speak in tongues. He tells you how to do it. He tells you the rules to follow. It's not glabby, 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 glabby. It's just another language. But if you're going to do that, here's how you do it. Ladies, don't do that. That's what he says. And what's going on in all of our Pentecostal churches and all these modern churches? Who's speaking in tongues? Most of the people. The ladies. And it goes right against Paul's rule. Anyway, I'm just winging here this morning because I like this stuff is really cool. He says in Corinthians that your zeal has provoked very many. You know what? Did you notice it doesn't say provoke what? It says actually 2 Corinthians 9:2. Your zeal has provoked very many. Provoked what? Provoked many to get right with their Bible, to read their Bible, provoked people to truly get saved, provoked people into rightly dividing, or provoked people to get mad at you. You still provoke it. And he says right here, in Galatians, they zealously affect you. Look at this verse, Galatians 4:17. I wish you'd get to this one, Galatians 4:17. There's ways to look at this thing, too. I tell you, you could preach every one of these verses for the day. Galatians 4:17, they zealously affect you, but not well. You're trying to take a stand. You're trying to do something as a Christian. We're going to the fair booth this week, or I'm going to the fair booth and whatever, and we're going to affect people, but they're going to affect me, too. And I don't like the fair booth. I don't like it anymore. Don't you bring your kids to the fair. If you do, don't bring them by the church booth. I don't want to see them. It's none of my business, but I don't want to see them. It'll hurt for me to see your kids at the fair. I know you got to do the goat for the time. I mean, down in the... How you want to deal with that is how you deal with that. Hey, I'm not in charge of your family. I know you care less what I think of them. Some of you probably bring your kids and walking by the booth just to rub it in my face. Fine, whatever. I would understand the situation. Your kids don't need to hear what I'm going to hear this week. They don't need to see what I'm going to see this week. I don't want to see and hear what I'm going to hear this week. I got away from that stuff. I don't want to look at that stuff anymore. They zealously affect you, but not well. The situation that you pull yourself away from, sometimes that will affect you. They will zealously affect you, but they'll tell you not well. They'll tell you not well. And he says, yea, they would exclude you if you might affect them. You know the fair would like to have our booth not there anymore, especially with the banner this year. I'm sure they're not going to like that. You know people don't want you to bring your Bibles when you go over for coffee and lunch. You know they don't want you to talk about that. You'll affect them, and they don't want to be affected by that thing. But then you get the opposite of that thing. They try to get together with you, and they try to be nice to you because they want to catch you off guard, and then they're going to go after you. That's a snake. Kind of, ever seen a snake kind of wither through the grass? That's pretty. That's pretty. Bam, you got it. Kids, stay away from the snakes, right? They zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude you that you might affect them. And as people hang around and kind of get close to you, if you start to affect them, you'll know it. Because they won't want to be around you anymore. If you're not affecting them, your witness is not effective, as he says in the Philemon there, then they'll affect you. And they will infect you. Now, verse 18. Marvelous stuff. This stuff is there for us. You see why it's there for us? I love smirks on faces, but oh well. You see why this stuff is there for us? There's a ton of stuff to learn in here that we can learn from. For the good of yourself. A lot of this is just fact. Any dispensation is fact. Look at verse 18. Therefore hath he mercy on... that's Romans. We'll get back to John. John 2, verse time-wise. We'll wrap this up quickly. Yep. Romans chapter 2, John chapter 2, verse 18 talks about, then answered the Jews and said unto him, what sign showest thou unto us, seeing that thou doest these things? Always asking for a sign. Then you get down in, I got a couple of verses left on the notes for people. It's if you see signs and wonders, Jesus says, you will not believe. So they had to have signs. We're not here for signs. All the stuff in the Gospels is about signs. We're not to follow signs. 18 to 21 talks about the temple being destroyed. Look at verse 19. Jesus answered, said unto them, destroy this temple, in 3 days I will raise it up. But they didn't know what he was talking about. He was the temple. Now, we could take some verses here. He chose when he was going to give up the ghost, as it says there, verse 21. He spake of the temple of his body. We realize that in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 19, where's the temple today? It's us. Totally different. And we are the temple of God, 1 Corinthians 6, 19. Look at Ephesians chapter 2. After this sermon, there goes less support for the church, LD. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19. Probably folks on the website, too. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19. Now, therefore, ye are no more strangers. So this is that reconciliation he's done with us. He didn't just make us the temple. This is a wall that he took down in verse 14 between us and the Jews. So now we are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God. Verse and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Well, of course, that's Old Testament and Gospels in there, and early Acts. Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Makes sense, doesn't it, when you read this stuff? In whom all the buildings fitly framed together groweth into an holy temple in the Lord. Is that us in this church? I hope not, because we've got some problems. But as a universal body of Christ we're all part of, yes, he says, of whom ye are also builded together for an habitation of God. He's in us. 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians somewhere, 6:19. Now go down to verse 22, back to John, we're getting this thing done here, John chapter 2, verse 22. When therefore he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this unto them, story about the temple there, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. This verse does not belong here. You notice that? This verse, all of a sudden, I mean, it belongs. I'm not saying that. Oh, I got this. This is the one mistake in the King James Bible. Now, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, all of a sudden, this verse applies. Remember at the very end when this thing was all done, they were perplexed when they risen Christ. They were perplexed. They were afraid. They believed these were idle tales. They didn't believe what the ladies had to say. And Peter, wondering himself, was Peter, they were terrified. They were frightened. They supposed that they had seen the Spirit when he showed up. And they believed not for joy. And they wondered. Why? It says right here at John chapter 2, at the beginning of this whole thing, that this is what they needed to remember. But they didn't. But this is what they should have remembered. What he's talking about right here. And they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. But when the time came, they struggled with it. Okay, and then verse 23. There it is again. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name. When they what? Saw the miracles. So what is this modern Christianity full of today? Something to see. That's all it is. It's something to see. And they get it right out of the Bible. Unfortunately, they had to change the Bible, but all that stuff's still in there. All the signs, all the miracles, all that stuff's still in there. And then my favorite two verses, the 24 and 25, why couldn't Jesus commit himself to them? What'd they have in him? Sin. He couldn't go in them at all. But when he died, and that spiritual circumcision took place, then he can go in us. That's a big difference in the Jews and us. In the Jews, he couldn't go in them. He was there, the Spirit of God was around him, on him, all that kind of stuff. Come and go. But, well, we live in a good time, don't we? How would you have done in the Jewish days, in the gospel days? How would you have done? Oh, I'd have understood. Right. But they didn't have video machines anyway, so that would have been a good thing. There we go. Take a break. See you in a couple minutes, hopefully.